Welcome to the Swim and Tell Spotlight. I am Jamie Bailey, and today Coach Brian Parisi, head coach at the University of Akron, is here. Coach Parisi has won 10 MAC championships in 11 years. He snagged Akron's first ever MAC title right out of the gate in year one and picked up 9 MAC Coach of the Year awards. He's also coached 6 NCAA All-American swimmers. Coach, thank you for being here.
Hey, Jamie, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk and, love the website and, looking forward to sharing whatever it is you'd like to know.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay. So let's start with the Mid-American Conference, the MAC. It's actually the second fastest mid-major conference in college, right behind the Ivies, which, by the way, the Ivies are faster than the Big 12. So how did this happen? Like, what do you think turned the MAC into such a fast conference?
It's a great question. I think it starts at the top with great coaches. And we've got a lot of great coaches in the conference right now. And we have had a lot of great coaches that are no longer in the conference from when I first started to be a part of it. So I think it's something that, has just kind of progressed over time as some swimmers have gotten faster than other teams and other swimmers. They see, wow, okay. So, it's going to take a, 53 and then a 52 or whatever it is in the butterfly or backstroke or 51 to win. Okay. They're seeing those things start to happen. And then people start to believe that they're capable of doing that as well. So, there's been an evolution of, a lot faster swimming, over the past 10 years for sure. But I think that, coaches play a big part of that. I think seeing fast swimming plays a part of that. I think we've got great facilities. So we rotate the facilities within the conference. So there's 6 teams that can host and they're all great venues for fast swimming. So I think that helps as well. And then I think we're not cutthroat with each other. We try to help each other out. We try to create a great atmosphere for student athletes, great atmosphere at the championships. And I think our commitment to that has also helped bring about better performances. So there's a lot of little things I think that goes into it, but how the coaches all work together, I think, is a big part of it as well.
Yeah, it seems like it just keeps getting faster too. Do you find that when you're talking to athletes and recruits that they're surprised when they see what it takes to make an A final at conference championships?
Yeah, I do. I think they are surprised sometimes. So that's why we like to pass that out and, ask them, one, did you know that it was going to be this fast? And two, how do you feel about that? But a lot of times that's met with excitement, like, okay, yeah, no, that gets me excited. That's what I want to be a part of. There's so many conferences as well. I think it's hard for anyone as they're looking at, trying to find a college, one, to remember what conference each college is in, but then also, what it takes to score or a lot of the numbers that go with it. There's just a lot of data and a lot of information that you kind of have to figure out. So, surprise, yes, but I think it's also just part of the education process that we have to do as college coaches.
So here's what's crazy to me. So you've got a smaller team than a lot of these big programs, especially, the Power Four programs. You're working with about 23 active swimmers this year. And you're going to have about 17 of those. They're going to go on and they're going to be on your conference championship team. So that doesn't really leave you a lot of room for error. So, when you're talking to recruits, what do they need to show you before you give them an offer for, one of those precious few roster spots that you have available?
I mean, there's a lot of things that we look at. One of them is, there is a certain level of ability. They are important and where someone's at. And we're generally looking for someone that can score in the conference right out of the gate. And that's because of the level of our program. But, that's one that, is just numbers based. Once you kind of fit in that criteria, we're looking for good people. Relationships are a real important part of our program. And I think it's a really important part of our success and something that we've really cultivated within the team and how we interact with each other, how we relate as, coaches to student athletes, as student athletes to each other, within their class, their housemates, with our divers, all of it. Because when you have good relationships, then you can have great things happen in the pool. You don't have as many distractions. Everybody's working, towards the same goal, and everybody, they genuinely like each other and they want to see, others succeed. And it becomes not so much about me, but it becomes just as much about, those that you're training with on a daily basis. And nobody wants to go and, get up on the podium and win and have none of their cheer, their teammates cheering for them. So, that's something that, we try to get out throughout the recruiting process is just if, how they're going to fit with the coaches and how they're going to fit with the team. And that's something that's really important and something that we really focus on. Another thing is, they have to be committed to the sport. They've got to want to be able to, work really, really hard. I think it's hard to know exactly what you're getting yourself into when you step foot on a college campus, because we can talk and talk and talk once a week for however long, talk on, on a recruiting visit. We're only going to be able to convey so much about what it's actually going to be like. We really try to do our best, but in the end, there's always going to be some things that, well, oh, I didn't quite catch that or this or that. And it might be harder. It might be, better in some way, but you never know. So, having the good relationships and being able to trust the coaches, being able to trust whoever it is coming in that, you know what, no matter what challenge we face, we're going to be able to work through it. I think that that's something that is also really important. And a year-round commitment, because that's what our sport is. And that's what, it was for, club and high school. Everybody for the most part is going to be swimming year round. Maybe they've got some other sports that they're doing, with their high school, which is totally fine. We've had athletes that come in at, where they've been playing other sports as well, but being willing to be able to take that step and commit year round is something that's really important, because that's where we make a lot of gains really in the spring and in the summer.
Yeah, with a small team, you talked about relationships and making sure that everybody, is gonna fit together well as a team. Do you look at official visits to really gauge how a recruit is gonna fit in with the team, or how do you try to figure out, is this person gonna be a good fit for us or toxic on the team?
I feel like I'm a pretty good judge of character pretty much right out the gate. I like to FaceTime as well, so we get to meet each other, from the get-go. I think that that's something that's also important. So I don't know how to describe that feel, but just through conversations and how questions are answered, kind of get a feel of, the how they're going to fit with our team and with our staff. So that's really kind of the way. I don't know that there's a, real quantitative way to, give an answer for that. It's just more of a feel. And, I feel like our culture also is really good where, when someone comes into it, there's, you can go either direction depending on who you're surrounded with. But I also have a lot of faith in our team, in terms of who they are as people. And I know that, when we have new people come into our program, they're going to assimilate a certain way. And that's really important. I think once you have that, it's really important to maintain that, because it's something that can keep your program being really successful for a long period of time.
Do you need to see a swimmer actually swim, either in person or on video, before you pull the trigger on that offer?
I always like to see them swim, usually on a video. In person, it not so much. I don't really get too concerned about that. We haven't done a lot of that. We see people maybe when we're out in the summer and stuff like that, coaching our squad. But I do like to have an idea just of kind of what their strokes look like and how they swim. I don't know that it, I don't know that it makes or breaks anything other than, I know that, we're really good at starts and turns. I know that we can, help someone extend underwater dolphin kick if someone's got a great first 15 meters. I like to be able to see that, and I'll have my stopwatch out and I'll time that on a video or in person. And, if there's a lot of speed there, I know we can develop that on the back half as well. So there's some things that you can see that I think are important. And, that can impact scholarship offers slightly one way or another. I like to be very objective with our scholarship offers in terms of, kind of where you fit in the conference, needs of the team. Those are all really, really important things. And obviously, the faster you are, or perhaps the more points that you could score at a conference meet or qualify for NCAAs, is going to equate to a larger scholarship offer.
So you mentioned scholarships, and of course we have, let's talk about pre-Grant House settlement and all these changes. You know, we have our scholarship limits set to us in swimming, right? The bigger teams, obviously, that gets spread out even further. So would you want a bigger team, or do you think keeping it tight, you know, like, you know, 20, 25 swimmers is where you thrive? You know, what's your sweet spot for team size as a coach?
I think that would be it, 20 to 25. I like having a little bit smaller group, so I'm able to work with everybody. I think one of the keys to having success over a long period of time is having consistent staff members or consistent coaches. The reality at Akron is I'm the consistent piece, and my assistants are always going to get taken away by larger programs. And in part, that's because of how good our team does. I remember Meg, she was here for 5 years. She was my assistant the first when I first took over. She was an alum, and she would have stayed forever, but things with her family ended up having a second child, and her husband was also a coach. So now it's like I see our assistant coaches. There's other programs that can offer a lot more money. So then a lot of times they get taken by them. So the consistency has been me. So I like having a smaller group because I do work with everybody and I do coach everybody. Where if you're part of a bigger program, especially say a men's and women's team, and you've got say 60 swimmers on that team or 50 swimmers, there definitely has to be a different setup in terms of how the coaching staff is spread out. And you're more than likely going to see different coaches that, oversee one group versus what we're able to do here, where I'm able to really oversee everything. And then I have our coaches kind of, bounce around to different places. But I coach everybody. So I have my hands in every aspect of the program.
So what's your take on the transfer portal? Are you leaving spots open for those potential superstars that are leaving the Power Four to jump in, or do you really prefer to build up your swimmers, right out of high school, and have them for those full 4 years of college?
I mean, I'd prefer to have the, build them up right out of high school. That would be my preference, but it doesn't always work out that way. And it's been, as far as, our history with transfers, it wasn't until probably last year that we really had a number of transfers that came in, because we actually had three that joined our program. One was post grad, so she was here for 1 year, and then the other two were they, coming in as a sophomore and then coming in as a junior. And it really just depends on what spots we had. See, again, I'll go back to, it's hard for me to keep assistant coaches just because of the level of the program, and then, being able to make more money elsewhere. Sometimes there ends up being a lull in recruiting. And I know I've missed out on a few people during coaching changes because I just can't do everything. And maybe that sounds like I'm making excuses to people listening out there, but regardless, that's just how it works. But then the transfer portal actually is something where we were able to, find a few people that have been great fits for our program and actually have done really, really well. So I think that, the transfer portal it's just another aspect of being able to build your program. But I don't know that it's would be smart to just rely on the transfer portal. And with all the changes that are happening right now, it'll be interesting. I think on the guys' side, just with the rumors in terms of what one conference might be doing with their roster limits. I mean, if they're reducing as much as they say they are, there's definitely going to be a big trickle down effect, because I think a lot of those gentlemen are going to be looking for new homes, but some might not. Who knows? It's kind of hard to say. But right now, it's just recruiting and looking for people that fit our program really well, and if they fill needs, then. And they're available now, then that's what we go with.
Yeah, the rumors about the conference roster limits. We had Coach Dorncott on, and he talked about the Big Ten being 30 for the men. The SEC, I don't think the SEC has officially given their number. They were floating 22, and I know some coaches have mentioned that. It seems like you're going to be at a pretty big disadvantage, 22 men versus 30. I guess if you have 22, full scholarships to give out, you can offset that a little bit. But Do you think the teams that have the larger roster sizes are going to have an advantage? You've been at that 23, 24, 25 mark for a while, thriving. What's your take on what's going to happen in the in those Power Four conferences?
In the Power Four conferences, it's probably going to be a little bit different. And I think that you're going to see, the NIL money. Is that right? NIL, NIL. I always mix up the acronym there. The NIL
NIL.
money, I think that's going to play a bigger impact into where a lot of the talent goes. I think relays are going to be really important, especially if you're a smaller roster team. But if you're able to, have those hammers and be able to, put out great relays, because you're able to attract that talent. I mean, in the end, it's going to be who can attract the best talent. And if you have the best talent and you make that talent better and you improve, then you're going to do great. So, maybe having a higher roster number would help, but at the same time, how many teams, on the men's side are fielding a full roster at the NCAA championships, right? I mean, I don't think that there's very many. Just a couple, maybe one. I'm not 100% sure. So, you're still just talking about 17 guys or 17 women, that would be filling out those rosters. So I don't know that it's, going to be the necessarily the death things, but I think it's going to be really difficult for those coaches to make decisions because, you're really going to have to, keep your numbers down.
There's a lot of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt with some of the athletes, and the parents and the families, regarding these changes. You hear, and it's anecdotal, and I have to counter it. They're like, oh, well, mid-majors are, they're just gonna have, they're just gonna work the transfer portal. They're just not offering the scholarships that they were. And I mean, I think we've seen maybe a little bit of that, but I don't see that as a trend from what I'm seeing. Do you think that's a thing? Are mid-majors going to start holding back for transfers, or do you think it's just more business as usual?
I think it's just business as usual, but I think that there's going to be some teams that they have spots available for one reason or another. But I don't know that, that's a strategy. It's certainly something that we considered here, but it's not anything that we've gone all in on. It's just more, well, okay, so obviously when it comes to recruiting, the women we recruit, they're talking with other colleges and we're talking with other recruits. So we're going to hear no more than we hear yes. But so you hear no, it's like, well, there's always the transfer portal, and how things are going to play out. I really feel like that's more of the mindset right now than anything else, because it's very uncertain and it's very unknown. And I think we would all prefer to know what our team's going to look like if we're able to do that. But in the end, if there's some opportunities later and there's those roster spots, then I think that obviously teams are going to take advantage of those.
So about half of your roster is actually international swimmers. Is that part of the game plan, or does it just kind of happen for you? And and what's the trickiest part about recruiting internationally?
So I think we're about a third. Well, maybe, I mean, maybe we are half. You probably looked
40,
at it. I didn't.
40%. If we want to get
40%.
exact, you're 40.
Because I know I've looked at it before, and we're like a third international, a third in-state, and a third out of state. And it just kind of depends. And then also if you include our divers in that number as well. But in terms of international, we're just looking for great swimmers that want to come here and compete. So they could be from Ohio, they could be from Hawaii, they could be from really wherever, Spain, Europe, Chile. We it doesn't really matter to us where somebody's from. We're just looking for great swimmers that want to be here, and they want to be a part of what we're doing and work with the coaches and work with the team. So I think it is neat for our domestic swimmers, if you will, and divers, that when they graduate, I see my social media sometimes where they've gone on trips to visit their friends from Spain or from Poland or wherever. So, there's a lot of cool places that a lot of our alumni have been able to visit because of who they got to know in our program. So I think that level of diversity is really cool. And I think that it helps make everybody better as well, which is I'm always trying to learn. So doesn't matter really what program somebody's coming from. I'm asking, do you have an idea of what, why you've been as successful as you've been? What is it that you did in your program? What did your coaches do back home that, you think is really valuable? And sometimes I get some good answers, sometimes maybe not, but, I want to try to pull that out of them because they've all reached a certain level for a reason. And, if there's something that we can do differently, that's a little bit better, I think that that's great. And the more, diverse group of students you get to work with, I think the more information you get.
So I've never made it a secret that I have a hate relationship with LCM to SUI conversion. I think it's just difficult, and those calculators are all over the place. So when you're recruiting internationally and you're looking at a swimmer who has predominantly been focused on long course meters, how do you evaluate how they'll do in a short course environment? How do are you trying to, evaluate their walls and their long course walls? Like, how do you make that judgment that what they've done on that in that long course pool is going to translate to, MAC championships?
Well, I, it's funny. I've got a good example of that, with someone who's on our team right now because she was a really good long course swimmer. And, I'd say her short course yard times didn't quite equate. And really it's just her, she was the fastest breaststroker in the pool. And even the summer, before she came here, I'm watching her, swim at sectionals and race against some of our team members. She dives in, she's like a body length behind everybody after the pullout. But zoom, she just motors up past everybody. And then on the turn, she's another body length behind everybody. But then, and I'm just, and I made the mistake actually a few years ago of watching a breaststroker at the Ohio High School State Championships who was the fastest breaststroker, but was not good at pullouts and was not good at her walls. And boy, did I make a mistake because she's a NCAA qualifier in the 100 and 200 breaststroke at a different university. And, we also had a lot of breaststrokers at the time. And if she's listening, she knows who she is, because I love the family. But, we had a lot of breaststrokers and it was just really hard. But anyway, so there's a lot of factors that go into it. But again, I like to be able to see how they compete. Some countries, they don't really, they focus more on long course and have very limited short course meters. So that, that might be the only thing that you're able to kind of look at. But I think that just kind of being able to see how they swim can help. But also, I know we do a great job of developing swimmers in all the strokes. So I have a feeling that we're going to be able to help them be faster. It sometimes just might take a year for them to adjust to the training or something along those lines, and then other times they start crushing it right out of the gates. But back to oh. Back to the swimmer that I saw this summer. So she's here now and she just lit it up. I mean, we've been working on her turns and her pullouts, and her pullouts can still get better. I think we finally got the turn, the one aspect of her turn to be better. And she's going to keep getting faster from that. But she had tremendous drop short course already, and we're only halfway through the season.
Yeah, I say it all the time to the athletes. When you're going through the recruiting process, coaches are looking for potential, not perfection. And I'm sure when you saw her turns weren't great, it wasn't disappointing at all. You were probably looking at that as a massive opportunity for, huge progression.
Yeah, I absolutely, because I think we've cracked the code in terms of like figuring out how to, correct some of those things on turns, which a lot of times is a push off, is a big part, or how you set it up. So, and the team knows those things. So they're extensions of the coaching staff, and they're underwater and they see everybody and they're able to help each other. And we've got a lot of little coaches on the team as well that help people get better too.
So, you're going through and you're looking at all these recruits, and I know you have tons that want to swim for you. Does it drive you nuts when you see somebody you passed on thrive? Do you have to have a short memory? Do you not pay attention? Like, how do you mentioned, you mentioned the one that's NCAA qualifier. How do you process that when you miss on a recruit?
It haunts me the rest of my career. There's a list of names going through my head right now. Some that have gone to other schools in the conference as well, where I had this feeling, and I want to know, like, so it, if we weren't able to make something work, I want to follow. So I do, because I'm learning from that. So when I do see something similar in the future, I'm more apt to trust my instinct. But then also some of the data too, because I haven't dug into your website too much because we're just getting started. But I know that some of the clubs where some of these recruits came from, they got a lot faster. I will have better information moving forward because of that. And that's something that's going to be helpful. But I have a list in the back of my head where it's like, okay, if somebody's coming out of this XYZ club, I know that more than likely there's a good chance that they are going to have some pretty significant drops. And then just getting some other information from them as well, could also back that up.
Yeah. We talk about these powerhouse programs that are mid-majors, and Akron always is at the top of that list. We talk about Akron, we talk about Oakland, we talk about San Diego State, we talk about some powerhouse D3s and D2s like, Emory and McKendree. Do you think, as you've gone through these, I think you're on your 12th season, right? Is it
Yep.
getting easier? Is the word getting out that, Akron produces so much success, or is it the same challenge every year getting those top end recruits?
I don't think it ever gets easy. But I do think that, our street cred is a lot better now than it was 12 years ago. And I think that that's something that's important. I think that, in terms of getting easier, I think there's a lot of coaches out there that, they like how we, the results that they see our swimmers get. And I think that it would be excited if, one of their swimmers came to our program. And, those are conversations that we have on the road. I think the biggest challenge, that's always there is, the swimmer that, is talking with mom and dad and, maybe their aunt and uncle, and, they're looking at, Akron and maybe, Ohio State or, Purdue or, and then, I ask them the question. I say, so, well, let's say you decided to come to Akron and you tell your parents and, your aunt and uncle that you're going to Akron. Are you worried that they might be like, oh, wow, that's great. I thought you might go to Ohio State or Purdue or wherever, and it's interesting the reaction I get sometimes because, sometimes I get, yeah, I am worried about that. And it's because the brand of some universities that is just so strong from, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon college football games or basketball or whatever, the situation is, that tends to be more the biggest challenge. And it's something that can be, I think I feel for, I feel for those recruits, especially if they want to go to, whatever school it is that isn't one of those powerhouse football or, basketball programs or whatever the case is, they I think feel a little bit of, insecurity about it just because of the mainstreamness of some of those programs.
Yeah, I agree 1,000,000%. And I think one of the positives that can come out of some of these changes where these roster sizes are getting smaller at the Power Four level is we have so many athletes that they're just so tunnel visioned to a Power Four team. They want to go to that team that they watch on Saturdays on, football. And even when we show them your path to making the travel team, your path to making the conference team is so much of a stretch. I think you will be happier here, another place. And it's so hard to get them off of that. I really think it's about where are you going to be happy? Where are you going to thrive? And a lot of times, if you're going to slog your way through all the yardage through college, being able to go to conference, win, wear a ring, that's huge. And I don't think people, a lot of the athletes, really understand. Will they be happy sitting on the bench just cheering for 4 years?
Sure. And it's not that maybe they won't be, maybe they work themselves up. Maybe they find themselves in a position where they are contributing. There's a lot of different factors that go into a decision. But, in terms of like, the initial question, I think that's just one of the challenges that sometimes, we have here. But in the end, I think, any college coach listening to this podcast, they can recognize that you're going to hear no more than you hear yes, and or you're not doing your job right.
Yep.
So that's how it works. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of value to being able to be a contributor in a program. I think that that's where I think that everybody in our program, they contribute in one way or another. But I've had a few swimmers that I've coached that, from the athletic side, they had the skill set, they had the speed on the underwater kicks, and I'm thinking of them right now, but they never believed that they could crack their way in to being a contributor in our butterfly group. And I remember having the conversations, just trying to build their confidence up, because it's a daily grind of, pushing yourself really hard to be able to, break through. And I think that that's something that, can be a challenge if you find yourself where it's like, oh, does it really matter? Like, I'm not, I'm in the B heat at a dual meet, or, whatever it is. Like, you have to be, I think, a really strong person to be able to, keep pushing yourself really hard to be able to break through and earn that spot in the A heat or on the conference team. But absolutely, I look back at, when I made my college decision, and I was one of the swimmers, I was like, I wanted to be at the bottom. I wanted to work my way up. And I look back and I think, man, I wonder if things would have been different if I would have thought about this a little bit differently. Because I do, I think they would. Not that I have any regret. I don't think anybody necessarily has any regret about, the decision that they make. We're all successful people. You can be successful anywhere. But I do wonder. I didn't have that approach. I wanted to grind. Maybe that's why I coach swimming now, because it's a grind. It's just ingrained in who I was. But yeah, I think that there's definitely value in finding a program where you're going to be able to contribute at the conference level, because that's what we focus on so much in our sport.
Yeah, you bring up a good point about grinding your way up. A lot of people know this, but for those that don't, for a lot of postgraduate opportunities, medical school, dental school, pharmacy school, being an NCAA athlete is huge. I mean, it is absolutely huge because if you have the drive and determination to leave home, go to a college where you're going to have, rigorous academics. Deal with a new social life and get up for 2 a days, be the one up at 6 a.m. going to practice, swim that yardage and contribute at a high level. That looks so good on a resume, whether it's graduate school or a job. And I've had so many resumes come across my desk from NCAA athletes, and I've loved them. And I remember interviewing one who told me he led the Big Ten. He was a lacrosse player, and he said he led the Big Ten in penalty minutes. I love that. That's just
That's awesome.
such a good bullet point on a resume. So.
No, that's it. What you're saying is very, very valuable. And I'm thinking of the students that I've helped with their resumes, and a lot of times you're sacrificing, maybe an internship, maybe you're sacrificing some experience that other students might be able to get. But I've seen that that hasn't hurt the students that we've worked with be able to go on. Now, I've also seen some where they're able to work those things in terms of their internships, or maybe it's a job or something like that in the summer. But I always encourage them to put the student athlete at the top of the resume, and put the program, put their accomplishments, but also put the accomplishments of the program too, because it shows that you've been a part of a successful organization. And everyone that I've talked with on our team that's had an interview, they tell me they ask a lot of questions about their experience on our swimming team and what that was like and what they've learned, and they want to know. So it's a really good talking point, but it also shows you that it shows them that you've been a part of something that's been very, very successful. So absolutely, that's important.
All right, so I want to talk about your development. So even though you have won the MAC 10 out of the last 11 years, you consistently come in second or third in terms of recruiting class rank across, MAC teams. So you win the MAC because your development has actually been one of the best of any team in the nation. So last year, your upperclassmen averaged a 3.2% time drop in their best events. And that's actually more than double the average drop for D1 females. What are you doing differently at Akron that other programs aren't figuring out?
Well, I don't know what other programs aren't figuring out, but I can tell you what we've been doing at Akron. One, like I said, the relationship piece is really important, because then there's less distractions. People work harder for each other. You're going towards a common goal and you actually care about the person that's next to you. I think that that's the foundation and something that can be overlooked or talked about real fast and moved on from, but it's actually like probably it's the most important piece, 100%. Because that's going to drive everything else. It's going to drive your culture. It's going to drive the efforts people put in. It's going to drive how, people respond when they're, at a low point or when they're experiencing a lot of challenges, because they're going to have people that lift them up. They're going to respond differently than if you don't have good relationships within that team. So that's really, really important. Other things we've got a lot of really cool toys. I think the way my mind works, I want to try to find a way for things to, for people to get better that maybe they haven't heard before. If you're trying to have a high elbow, this may be a good example of how my mind works. Their coaches have been telling them to keep a high elbow their whole career. And so what am I going to do differently? Well, I'm gonna have to talk about it differently, or I'm gonna have to show them, or maybe it was 10 years ago in my garage, I made my own paddles that actually force your elbow to be higher. And they're a little bit awkward. They're not on the market. I don't have a patent for them. I don't think I'd make much money, but everyone on my team, they have a pair of them and they use them in their meet warm-up for the most part. So I know that there's something that's good about it. And I think it activates things in the right way. But I'm always trying to find ways to explain things a little bit differently. Something that's really going to help us moving forward is we finally got things figured out with our underwater camera system. So we've got six underwater cameras and then two above water cameras that we recorded our invitational. We recorded every race we had, and that was from six different angles. And it instantly went to the iPads that we had on the pool deck. And so when they come back from a race, they could pick up one of the iPads and be able to watch underwater, be able to see, oh, I felt like I was a little long on that turn. And they're able to see that right away. And the speed of being able to see that and be able to make adjustments, I think that that is something that is huge. And it's something that then we're able to incorporate even better into our practices because, we have all of that visual information right away, and it's really high quality. And I joke, it's like, the NFL players that you see on the sidelines with the Surface tablets when they come off the field, like that's what we're doing right now. And that's really, really exciting. But other things too that I think make a difference. We don't do a lot of dual meets. We actually will suit up once in October, once in November, once in December, once in January, and then February for the conference championships, and then in March for NCAAs and the National Invitational Championship. A while back, I just kept thinking about the whatever they were called, the Pro Series meets, the whatever that those series are called now, and how the professional athletes, they would suit up once a month because they're going to these competitions. I'm like, well, why aren't we doing that? And so like in October, we have a three session time final meet that we host, which is we also do in January. We go to Notre Dame every year for their three session time final meet. But when you suit up like that, I prefer to do it in competition and not really in dual meets, because dual meets, you're doing three or four events in a, 2, 3 hour time period. And I don't think you get a lot of real relevant data from it. There's not really much to pull from it. But these, invites, right? So you have a day and a half where we're able to like work together for a longer period of time than we are during a dual meet. And then when we have a prelim final in November and a prelim final in December, like we're actually working on racing and how we can be better for a longer period of time than if we just had dual meets or, day to competition here, day to competition there. I like suiting up because it removes the variables. Now, I don't give them a new suit every time, which would be any a different, a whole other variable, right? But in terms of, they can wear old suits. So, it is different than racing in practice suit or a dual meet suit. And so you're able to get more relevant feedback at the end of the season if we didn't go faster than we did in October, November, December, well, then you can actually ask the questions, well, what went wrong? What do we do different? Which could be training, it could be the pressure of the moment, it could be what's going on outside the pool, it could be nutrition. There's a lot of variables that go into it, but because we do it so often, we're able to, get rid of the variable of a regular suit and trying to figure out what that actually means for performance. I know, some folks, they might get a little worried about, well, what if somebody swims really fast and then, they're worried they can't swim that fast again, or this or that. Well, those are all teaching opportunities. That's what they are. So, you're looking at things differently than we did 20 years ago, where you just wait until people go fast at the end of the year. Now it's an educational opportunity. Okay, well, we know the suits make a difference, but then also the moment makes a difference. Where we have someone on our team, Grace Newfer, who is a Paralympian, and she swam in Paris this summer, got a silver medal, right? So, I think that there is that post-Olympic lull that happens. And I was talking to her after one of her races in December, and she's like, I don't know, why wasn't I a little bit faster? I'm like, well, I go, did you go to bed last night and wake up this morning the same way you did when you were in Paris? And she's like, no, you're right. And I'm like, so I go that, so that also plays into it as well. So it just gives the opportunity to be able to figure out that, okay, hey, yeah, there is other things that go into it besides the suit. That doesn't change, but you have to be able to know if that's something you need to talk about. And one of the ways you'll be able to do that is if you have better data and you suit up more often. So I think that that's something that really helps us. When you swim fast early in the season, that's great. Yeah, you might not get as big of a drop at the end of the year, but that's managing, expectations. The faster you get too, it's also going to be a lot harder to have big drops. There's just a lot that goes into it. So yeah. And I would rather them swim fast early and then, oh, maybe it doesn't go as well. And then we figure out why. So that doesn't happen again. And maybe that's on me. Maybe that's on them. I don't know. There's a lot of things that go into it. So I think that that's something that helps our improvement as well, because we're always curious and we're always trying to find ways, and just how the team interacts with each other. And, somebody might come up to me and ask for help on a start or underwater kicks. And I'm like, go talk to Abby because she's going to help you better than I am. And then I'll ask Abby what she did. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Or they remember something I told them 3 years ago that helped someone else that I'd totally forgotten about. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. Let's do it. So there's a little bit.
So I really think that is a smart approach. I like the fact that you suit up often. I would not want to just be surprised at the end of the year about how somebody's going to swim. To see them suit up and swim once a month, it seems like that is a good way to evaluate your in-season progress and sort of dampen down those surprises at the end of the year. And the other thing, and I agree with you completely. There's so much discussion around making dual meets more exciting, but your championship meets at the end of the season where it really counts, they're not in that same format. And so to swim more meets in that format, but also suit it up, you probably have a really, really good idea how you're going to do at MAC championships before you ever arrive. And I think that's really smart.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, you do. And then with what you see in practice also. So, that can play into it as well. But yeah, I know that there's been a lot of talk about making dual meets more exciting and stuff. And, maybe they just need to be more important, or the format needs to be more important or more relevant. Or, like us with the 3 session timed final event, we have 5 teams that are here, men's and women's. So there's more people there by default because it's a little bit bigger of a competition. Not everybody suits up at that October meet, but still, there's a really good turnout spectator wise.
So, when you have this really good progression in your upperclassmen, one of the things that you've done is you've kept them motivated for years, right? And I wonder how you structure your season, how that contributes, because I've definitely seen the stress on athletes of having no taper meets, no suiting up until the end, getting the flu, having a bad taper, like you said, just having an off cycle schedule, didn't get enough sleep, and they do bad, and then they got to wait a whole nother year to figure it out. You've got a lot of checkpoints through the season to know, hey, I am what I'm the work I'm putting in, it's giving me results. And I wonder how much that contributes to the fact that you've kept your athletes motivated through their whole career.
Maybe, I don't know, but it's good data to go back and look and see where you were the year before, because everybody does it. I mean, even we, swim awesome in February and March, and then we come to that October meet, and then I have a couple people that come, they're like, why am I swimming so slow? And I pull up what they did it last year in October, and they're like, oh, I was really slow then. And I'm like, exactly. I'm like, so just relax. Like, it's totally fine. Sure, maybe they are faster or whatever, but I'm just saying, like, there is something to be said about that consistency. But then even if they swim different events, then that changes the conversation too. Because I've had some people that swim different events at our invite in December. And, so then that changes the data a little bit, but then that also keeps it exciting for them because there's somebody that actually swims, a lot of different events. So they have some options in what they're going to compete at the end of the year. So, yeah.
So let's talk tuition for a second, because Akron's in a really interesting position. So, the cost of college, it keeps going up. It's a lot of scary numbers when you see that cost of attendance, but Akron's actually one of the most affordable schools to attend in all of Division I swimming, in-state or out-of-state. Do you see that as an advantage? Do you use that as an advantage when you're recruiting?
I mean, I guess it's an advantage. I don't know that I use it in that regard when it comes to recruiting, because I think in the end, with anybody that's being recruited, I think it should, if finances are important, because that's if it's not important for everybody. Some people, they can go wherever they want to go and pay whatever because that's their life situation, and that's great. Others, it can be different, but in the end, I think that it just matters what the bottom line is and what you're going to have to pay at whatever school you're going to be at. And I think it does help that we're affordable, but at the same time, we have the same percentage of scholarships that every other school does. Although I guess some of that's going to change here with the NCAA settlement and all that stuff that's coming down the pipeline. But no, I think we are very fortunate and can make it very affordable for those that decide to attend Akron, because it is very inexpensive to come to school here and provide a great education. And we also have great academic scholarships as well. So we become very affordable, very affordable.
Are you guys fully funded as a athletic program? At least the definition of fully funded prior
Yes,
to
we
the
are.
NCAA settlement.
Yeah,
Okay.
we have 14 full scholarships that we can offer. So we are fully funded with that definition. We will not have 30 full scholarships moving forward. At least I don't think so. Maybe my administration will surprise me. I have no idea. But right now, until all that gets settled, I don't put a whole lot of thought into worrying about what's going to happen. I think that things are going to work out the way that they're supposed to work out, and then we'll handle those situations when we get there.
Okay, so we've talked about NIL, name, image, likeness. We mentioned the Grant House versus NCAA settlement. There's so much fear around those changes and how they're going to affect college swimming at a specific college, all the way to the macro level of the sport. How do you think this is going to shake out for your program? Do you think it's a good thing, bad thing, not really much of a change?
I don't think there's going to be too much of a change for Akron. I think Power Four, I think that's going to be a significant change, or has a greater opportunity for that to change. But I think in the end, they're just going to be the same, relatively speaking, levels of talent that end up coming to Akron or other schools that are like us. And then our job is to help them improve. I don't think that we're going to have these massive NIL deals. I couldn't even tell you if we have any right now. To be honest, I think I know our athletic department helps in some ways, but it's not anything that I've really thought about, and I don't think that it's not going to change very much on our level. And that could be wrong. And if it does, then we'll have to adapt. But I think the trickle down is going to be about the same. And I think that those that want to compete are going to be able to compete and find places that they want to go to, and it's going to be about the same. So.
That's my thought too. I get asked this question a lot, and I know so many of the headlines revolve around the very top end of swimming, the power fours and what they're doing, and they are greatly affected because of the budgetary constraints that they have and roster size limitations that are trickling down. But my belief is that the bulk of swimming, this is the mid majors, this is the D2s and the D3s. I don't think what happens at the top end is necessarily a reflection of what's going to happen across the board. I could be wrong. We've got to wait and see how it goes, but I don't have that same sort of like gloom and doom that so many people have with these changes.
Yeah, I don't either. And hopefully we're right. Until everything comes out, we won't really know. But I think that's also how I approach life. I don't really worry about things until I need to worry about them. Today has enough challenges in it for me to be working on. So, we'll tackle this one once they figure it out in the courtroom, and we'll go from there.
Okay, last question. So when you're not coaching swimming, what is the most fun sporting event to check out at Akron?
At Akron,
Yes.
I mean, our men's soccer program, they are awesome. So, they actually just went into the Big East because the MAC doesn't have soccer anymore. But we won a national championship in 2010. And Jared Embeck, our coach, he's been to three Final Fours since I've been here. So that's pretty exciting, when you have a team of that level. A lot of their guys, they end up going on and playing professional soccer, or you'll see them in the World Cup. But there's a lot of really good athletes there, and those matches are really exciting. So I would say that men's soccer would be the most exciting at Akron.
Nice. Well, Coach, thank you so much for being on. That was really fun. I cannot wait to see how you progress through the season. You've already started off huge. So it's going to be fun to see if you get what your 11th MAC title. So keep that streak going. So thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate being here too. Happy holidays.
All right. You too. Thank you.